Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 45 of season 5 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1990 Bruce Willis action film Die Hard 2, Die Harder, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off this week and finish off the SWAT team is Heather Baxendale from Word of Hellmouth. Welcome back, Heather.
Hello. Thank you for having me back. I'm pretty sure these guys are doomed.
Yeah, I think so too. But you knew that, we knew that beforehand, you know, just watching them, you know, the way that they walk and talk and what they do, you know, that they don't really have much of a chance here, but.
Yep. They're red shirts and black shirts.
Yes, they are. That is right. Minute 45 begins with the SWAT leader getting even more agitated and ends with the stuntman SWAT guy falling back in death. So yesterday we basically ended things with, you know, you have the five SWAT guys and Barnes walking on the slidewalk, and you know, O'Reilly, played by Robert Patrick, turns that off, and they all do a little Abbott and Costello routine by falling forward a little bit, you know, for comic relief, and then, you know, getting back up. And then the SWAT leader started screaming, and he goes, "Hey, put that back on." And he gets no response whatsoever. You know, now, first of all, the fact that he's yelling at O'Reilly, like, what's the point? You know, it's not like they're stranded. They can keep walking.
Yeah, and they were running up it anyway. And let's be honest, it would be easier to run up if it's not moving.
Correct.
But maybe he's not all that smart. He just might be really good with shooting things.
Correct.
Maybe.
Yeah.
We never really get to find out.
Nope. We shall never find out. And then he screams, "Hey, asshole, what do I look like to you?" Which again, you know, why? You know, I mean, at this point we see Mulkey, you know, he's starting to get in position. He starts uncovering. He's got like a toolbox. And, you know, then we get a great shot of from the camera as, you know, the SWAT leader starts getting closer to O'Reilly, because they let the shot, it looks like it's gliding, basically, the way that it, you know, it moves forward. Mm-hmm. It's probably on some sort of track, you know, moving forward towards O'Reilly. And then he says, "What do I look like to you?" And then O'Reilly's response is great. I mean, first of all, Robert Patrick, as we know from Terminator 2, is great at just turning around really quickly, but not really changing his facial expression that much. And he just turns around and says, "A sitting duck." And then
so great.
Very quickly, he has his gun in his hand and shoots and hits this guy right in the middle of the forehead. I mean, it's like when if you watch it in slow motion, it's right in the center of his forehead, and you see that squib just explode right there as his head, you know, goes back. You know, it's done really,
it's
really
perfect
well.
Shot.
Yes, it's definitely a perfect shot. And there's no reaction from any of the other guys as he's getting shot. It takes them a fraction of a second to start, you know, getting involved in what's going on and stuff like that.
Which essentially saves O'Reilly, too, because that element of surprise is what gives him a moment to collect himself and not just become cannon fodder himself.
That's correct. Nobody expected this. You know, that's the thing. So before we move forward, so, you know, I found I decided to look up what is a sitting duck. You know, like what does it mean? Where did it come from and stuff like that? All right. So a sitting duck is what do you think it is?
I can't imagine. It's an idiom that we never really think about. I'm going to go with maybe it's a duck who's laying eggs, so it can't leave the eggs or something of that nature.
Right. Okay. So basically, this is something that came from World War II. And the it a sitting duck is someone or something who is an easy target, someone or something who is defenseless or vulnerable. The idiom was first used by the British and the American troops during World War II to refer to military targets that were hard to defend, such as foot soldiers without places to retreat from enemy fire. The term sitting duck was borrowed from the sport of hunting, as a duck that is sitting in a marsh or on the water is easier to hit than a duck that is in flight. Today, the term sitting duck may refer to someone who is literally a target for a bullet, but is most often used in a figurative sense.
So its origin is pretty
Yes.
literal.
Yeah, basically the origin. My assumption is actually they probably hunted in England too. So I was about to say that it was probably like from American hunters, but they probably did their fair share of hunting in England also. I guess usually of birds, not necessarily ducks. When you have when you send out the hounds or whatever it is, you see all the aristocracy.
Pheasant hunting is a big thing too. Pheasant, turkey.
Foxes,
I mean,
right?
there's all sorts of game. Yeah, it's a thing for
Yeah,
sure.
that's true.
We never did ducks in my family. We did pheasant and we did turkey
Okay,
hunting, but that was it.
that's fair. And
The elusive turkey, unless it's on your front yard when you live in the suburbs. So strange.
actually pretty funny.
It's true. I see them in the wild so rarely, but when I'm up north and in the woods, but down here, yeah, I had one last week or the week before just walking across my front
And
yard.
you didn't like grab him and put him in the freezer so that you have something to eat on Thanksgiving in a few months from now.
Have so much in my freezer, and my husband randomly brings home hams or turkeys anyway. Actually, I have two extra freezers. So, no. Plus, they're quite vicious. And I'm pretty sure my neighbors wouldn't take kindly to me going out there and shooting down a
Gobble
turkey.
gobble.
Should wrestle
Yeah,
it
that's
next
true.
time. Next time for you, Rob, I'll wrestle
There
a
you go.
turkey.
And so as soon as the SWAT leader starts falls down, the other four, it takes them a second, but they quickly get into position and they start firing, and one of them starts shooting at O'Reilly, and O'Reilly is able to duck behind a toolbox that he has there, which completely explodes. I mean, you see like a light bulb that flies up, and a screwdriver, and there's like a little wrench there that also flies up. And we see all the bullet holes also in this toolbox, which is great.
Yeah, these guys are basically stormtroopers. They can't
That's
take
right.
him.
Well, come on, they're not meant to, because they're not the heroes of the movie.
No, they're not. They
That's
are
right.
not. But it is a good indicator. All of those explosions are a good indicator that they did miss
Yes,
O'Reilly.
that's true. And so basically the shot then changes, but we still hear the sound of gunfire. Okay. One of the guys actually screams, "Take him!" And then another one screams, "Shit!" And then we get a shot of John, and we he goes, "Damn it. I hate it when I'm right."
I love that so
And
much.
as he's crawling through the vent, he once again pulls his gun out of the holster, like he did just 2 years ago in Nakatomi, and he has the gun in front of him, getting ready to take action when he needs to. He's pretty good at this. He knows, how to shoot from a vent.
Yes, at this point, he is the only expert ever in this particular
Yes,
scenario.
that's true.
And then after this, he's going to be an even bigger expert in this particular
That's right.
scenario. It's a useful tool to have. Fighting in random places on Christmas time from an air
Yeah,
duct.
pretty much. Yeah.
John McClane.
He's probably in the Guinness Book of
He's
World
got it.
Records, the only guy who twice was in a situation like this. And then the shot goes back and we see Sheldon, shooting from the scaffold at them. And then the SWAT guys return fire. And you can see in the background when the SWAT guys are shooting, we can see Mulkey in the background. He's a little blurred, but he's still in the background. And then O'Reilly does a quick what is it, duck and cover? You know, roll duck and cover or something like that. He
Stop,
that's right,
drop,
stop,
and
drop, and roll.
rolls.
There you go. He jumps to the ground and rolls over. And then he gets up really quickly as he's rolling over. He must have had to practice that a lot. You know, he rolls over and quickly stands up, and he's got, you know, a pistol in one hand and his MP5 in the other hand, and just starts shooting. You know, and
Perhaps this is not his only scaffolding painting
correct.
airport
That's true.
gunfight as
And
well.
he ends up taking out one of the SWAT guys who we see falls over the banister towards the other side. John gets starts getting closer. We hear all the screaming and whatever, and one of the guys says, "Look out, get down." You know, we're back at John going, he's upped his pace, you know, going as fast as possible in order to
Yes.
try to get there. He's still probably a good distance away, but he's trying to cover that distance as quickly as possible. And then the shot goes back. I mean, great editing with the way that they do this, to have them go through. So the shot goes back to the SWAT guys. And now we saw a second SWAT guy get shot and fall over the side, right? Just a few seconds ago. But now we're back here at the gunfight, and there are four SWAT guys that are there.
Sure
One of them,
are.
we just see his leg as he's, it looks like he's jumping over, but maybe that's the guy who got shot, but he's on the wrong side. Because here he's going off to the left, but before when he got shot, he was going off to the right. And then Barnes tries to protect himself, and he jumps over the side, and
Which, well
yeah,
done.
and he gets a nice roll there also, you know. So
Looks like it's not his first time either.
apparently not, even though he said it wasn't in his job description. Maybe it just wasn't in his job description,
No.
but he still does it, you know.
He does. Maybe he had a lot of practice back in the day on the playground.
It could be. It could be.
Muscle. Yeah, muscle memory right there.
That's right. Apparently. And then we get a shot of Shockley. You know, remember we talked about him yesterday, Mark Boone Jr., who is
Yep.
shooting at them. And then you have all this flying glass, another diehard trope. You know, a lot of flying glass. Barnes is being showered
And
with
he's getting
glass.
boo-boos from it.
And he covers his ears. You know, probably not from the glass, but more from the loud, you know, pinging sounds of all of
Pew-pews.
these. That's right, the pew-pews. And you know, we can see that his arm is a little bloody. So at some point, he got cut by something. Who knows what?
It's possibly the glass. His coat's pretty thick though, so maybe he just cut himself on one of those dangerous edges of something over there.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's a dangerous place. It could be many things.
Correct. Especially when there's a lot of shooting.
Bingo.
You know, just because there's a lot of things. Shotley was shooting at them, and then Barnes looks at his cut wrist or cut arm and is trying to figure out what he's going to do. He holds onto it. One of the SWAT guys starts shooting from behind these cardboard boxes, which are great. It's a great place to hide when someone's shooting at you, because those cardboard boxes
Because
are gonna absorb all of those bullets really, really well.
red shirts.
That's right. Then we get another shot of Sheldon up in the scaffold. He's shooting at them, and he ends up shooting through the cardboard box and hits the guy who is hiding in the cardboard box, and he flies backwards, you know, in typical stuntman fashion, the way that
Yeah,
he
that's great.
staggers backwards. You know, I mean, yes, there definitely is momentum hitting him, you know, with the bullets, but it's a little exaggerated by the way that they do it here. And Sheldon keeps shooting as the guy is falling. He breaks through a you know, a ladder and a whole bunch of other things. I guess it gives a new meaning to the fact that it's you know, bad luck to walk under a ladder. You know, because he's
Yeah, I
thrown
think so.
under that ladder. And then Shockley gets up and starts shooting again. And one of the other SWAT guys then shoots Shockley. This
That
is
makes it a
also,
good death.
it's a great death because, you know, you see his entire torso explode with all these squibs, and a lot of blood, gushing out as he is thrown backwards to a bank of payphones, which
Yeah,
obviously
and he goes
have no use
airborne
now.
too.
Yes, he
Yeah,
does.
he's at least a foot off the ground, which, I mean, again, it might be unrealistic, but who cares? It looks great.
Yes. So here we have Shockley. He's the second death of these bad guys after John killed Cochrane. But this is actually the first time that someone else kills somebody. Nameless red shirt SWAT guy gets credit for killing Shockley. Shockingly, right? Shockingly, he kills Shockley.
A
And
tongue twister.
yes, and then he bangs up against the wall. You see the pain on his face, and then he knocks over a light pole that's right next to him also as he falls to the ground. And then the SWAT guy, feels a little too overconfident and keeps shooting. And then we get one of the other bad guys to Marky, what's his name?
Mark Boone
No,
Jr.
Mulkey. No,
No,
Mark Boone Jr.'s dead.
Mulkey.
Mulkey
Yeah, he
then.
went kaboom into the. Yeah.
That's right. Mulkey then pops up behind from behind what looks like, sleeves that you would have in the back of a washing machine, or a conduit's sleeves, I guess you can say, which is probably also something that will absorb fake movie bullets, so it's a good place to hide.
Yeah. As George R. R. Martin would say, all the people that have died here died because they did something stupid.
Yes, that is true. And so at this point we get Mulkey then shoots the guy who just killed Shockley, and he also flies backwards. It looks like he's even tap dancing the way that he moves backwards.
Yeah.
So maybe he has a background in dancing and wanted to use this on his audition tape for future gigs. Hey, I can even dance backwards as I'm getting shot.
It's a talent and certainly a unique one.
Yes. And he falls back, drops his gun, and there's tons of sparks, which I don't know why there are sparks there, because I don't think that in real life there would be sparks from hitting, the side of this slideway, but it's still fun to look at.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. It's serving its purpose.
Yes, that's right.
You know, that's another thing with all these SWAT guys. They don't have any armor on. They have no protection at all. Maybe they do have vests on underneath their
No,
stuff,
I think they have
but
vests on. I think
it's
they do have vests, yeah. But that doesn't help them because they all still
no.
get shot in the chest. So, well, except for the first guy who gets it in the head.
Yeah, well, that's because he was a sitting duck.
Yes, that he
You should just
was.
be a duck. Don't be a duck.
That's right.
Try not to do duck things. You'll live longer,
Yeah.
particularly in diehard movies.
That's true. And then I love the
An
fact that
important one.
we see Barnes, who's just screaming. There's like
Yes.
no real explanation as to why, how it will help him to scream, besides alerting the bad guys to his position. That's the only thing that I can really understand from what he's doing there.
I mean, he's a civilian and he's just panicking and freaking out. And I mean, I guess I like him.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm rooting for him. So yeah, he's gotten a boo-boo. This is his first firefight. So for him to be slightly wacko and irrational makes more sense than some of these other
That's true.
guys who should be professionals.
That is definitely true. And then,
And instead are hiding behind
that's
cardboard.
right. And then Mulkey keeps shooting again and ends up hitting another SWAT guy who we see the bullet holes go through him. So, because we see from behind, that they have squibs on his back, even though he was shot in the front. So that works too. And then he staggers backwards, and that's pretty much how this minute ends. We know that there's supposed to be less SWAT guys, but there are still two SWAT guys that are standing there shooting. So I don't know. There's some continuity errors here with this one, because
I think so. I think that's bad math. I think there should only be one
that's
left.
right. There should only be one left, but there are two. There's the guy who's staggering backwards, and then you can see in second 59, you see two of them that are there on the right-hand side of the screen. So I don't know.
Yep. They made a yeah. boo-boo.
And as he staggers backwards, that's when this minute ends.
Indeedy.
Yeah. So did you have anything else you want to say about this minute? Because, I mean, it's we were very descriptive of everything that happens here, so.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's a quick action sequence that goes by really, really fast, and it's a fun one. It's fun to go through in slow-mo and see all the little details.
That's right. That is very true. All right, so the script is pretty much the same, but I'm still going to read through because it's nice and descriptive. So, you know, the SWAT guy screams, "Hey, put that back on." No reaction. The cop begins to run forward. Okay, in the movie, he doesn't run. He's just walking fast. And then he goes, "Hey, asshole, yeah. What do I look like to you?" The man turns. It's O'Reilly, one of the ones who killed the real painters. He has a gun. A sitting duck. He shoots him. The other three workers turn, and now we see that they are Sheldon, Shockley, and Mulkey, Stewart soldiers all. Barnes and the other cops duck down as bullets rake the slidewalk and ping off of its walls. They jump over the railing and take cover. Another cop is killed on the move. Barnes is cut badly on the arm by flying glass. He cringes behind a dumpster while the three remaining cops exchange fire with the four soldiers. Bullets hit near his metal case. He takes a deep breath and rescues it. McLean in the tunnels, he tosses off his sweater into the darkness. Underneath his shirt is already sweat-stained. And then he hears the gunfire. It's close. He gets his bearings and lunges through a wall of steam. A third airport cop dies. His partner kills the gunman, Shockley, who took out his friend. And then he's killed himself. And that's pretty much how it ends. You know, next week we will continue with what happens in this firefight. Again, you know, they don't really add anything here with what they have in the script. I like the way that it appears in the movie itself, that they expanded on the firefight, and that, you know, in the script they didn't need to basically be descriptive about it. They just said, okay, it's a firefight. So let's see what you do with it, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah. And I mean, it's a diehard script as well. So, you know, that they're going to be able to fill in the blanks there too. And perhaps play with the background and change a few things. But I like how this one looked. I like how it played out. I like that it started off with villain taunting before there was any murdering. And then it just went crazy. And there was a nice build up to it too over the week. So it was a good sequence. And I won't be here to finish it out with you, but it was definitely what happens after is good too. So you'll have fun.
Oh, for sure. I'm gonna have fun talking about that all next week. I have a great guest to talk all about that with. You know, Jim O'Kane will be here next week, and he always has what to say about these things. You know, so he's the godfather of the Movies by Minute community. So he's a great person to have as a guest. Which will be fun. Not that you're not awesome. That you're not a great guest too, Heather. Don't take that the wrong way.
Don't worry, there's room for all of us.
That is right. I agree with you on that. I wholeheartedly agree. So every Friday I have a new segment called "Where Are They Up To This Weekend?" Which I'm sure Heather, you've been wondering, you know, since you got my email months ago, what the hell this is talking about and what we're going to do.
Actually, I have.
which I'm glad about. it makes sense. Have you had a chance to figure it out this week or not? After
I have not. Okay.
So you see, we weren't even paying attention to things that I asked you to do. So basically the idea behind this is that, okay, we've gone through 45 minutes of Die Hard 2. So now the question is, you know, where are other movies? Where are they standing at this point? Like, what is going on at the 45-minute mark on other movies? So since Heather doesn't have her own Movies by Minute podcast, I decided to ask her for her favorite movies. And now we're going to test. Now we're going to test Heather's.
That's why you were
asking. That's right. Now we're going to test Heather's memory to see how well she knows the movies that she claims are her favorite movies. Okay, so the first one that we're going to talk about is the movie Seven from 1995. So what is going on at the 45-minute mark?
Okay, at the 45-minute mark, I have to talk myself through this.
You are okay. Allowed.
The 45-minute mark in 7. At this point, the two have been working together a little bit. I'm going to say it's got to be past gluttony or somewhere near that scene. I think it's after it. I think it's after it. It has to be somewhere in between them discovering the first body and then realizing that this is just beginning. So I'm going to say it's the moment where Morgan Freeman goes to the library and starts doing research.
No, it's where they find the fingerprints on the wall in the apartment.
Oh, that's a good scene, yes. Too. Well, every scene in that movie is good. It's so perfect.
It really is. Okay, next up is T2, which we talked a little bit about earlier earlier today. Or was it yesterday? No, yesterday we talked more about it about Robert Patrick. So yes. Terminator 2, what is going on at the 45-minute mark on Terminator 2? And again, I looked at the director's cut edition, you know, the extended cut.
Okay, the director's cut edition. Okay,
because there's actually here. I'm gonna give you a hint. There's actually something that happens here that is only in the extended cut.
Oh, is it the flashback that Sarah has with Michael Biehn, or where she imagines him?
Walk yourself through this one, Heather. Don't guess. Walk yourself through it.
Okay, so we go to the beginning. They go there. They get those stuff. John's in the arcade. I feel like it's somewhere near around this point that they've already done, or they're about to embark on the chase sequence on the two bikes where he finally meets Arnie. I don't know.
So it's the point where the T-800, you know, Arnie is explaining to John about the T-1000 and that he's able to mimic things. And this is after he tells John that, your step-parent, your foster parents are dead.
Okay, I was going to go to that, at least somewhere in that area was where I was going to guess.
Okay.
With the jock dudes.
That's right.
The jock douchebags.
It's after the jock douchebags with that. And then it's the thing that happens exactly at the 45-minute mark is we see the T-1000 leave John's house and the dog starts barking. And he walks over to the dog, and then we hear the sound of the dog dying. And that is in the extended cut.
Oh, yeah. That's in the director's cut.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah.
Your foster parents are dead.
That's right. But it's a T-1000. What do you expect? You know, he's got no emotion.
No. He's a killer. That's his thing.
That's right. All right. Next up is Aliens. What is happening at the 45-minute mark on Aliens?
Okay, this one is this one the director's cut or not?
Yes, it is.
This is the director's cut. Okay. So we've gone through Ripley getting reacquainted with the new timeline. She discovers her daughter is dead, which they go into more detail with. They also have the scenes in the beginning. With Wayland, with Newt and her family. So we knew that they get murked pretty early on. So it's got to be on the Sulaco. And I'm gonna say it's after all the Marines have come out. I don't know if they've made it to LV-426 yet. But it's close in that timeline because I think the director's cut runs at about 2:47. Actually, we were talking about background stuff, too. And that one in the director's cut, if you do the countdown, you have 15 minutes to reach minimum safe distance. I'm going to say that this is probably close to when they do the drop to LV-426.
It is not close to somewhere. That. It is that. It is the drop.
Woo-hoo!
Very good, Heather. I'm very, very impressed.
Yeah.
All right, now you.
Okay, in fairness, too, I've seen that movie an unhealthy amount of times. Actually, it's not unhealthy. I was just thinking I haven't watched it in like 6 months. I should watch it.
So after you finish Point of No Return, go ahead and watch that. You know, I probably should rewatch Aliens also. Now that I went through it, you know, looking for this information for you. Now I decided to actually When we talked about your favorite movies, so when you told me your number one favorite movie, I was like, okay, I'm not going to do that. But I decided to actually, take the challenge. And so now we're going to go through the three films of Lord of the Rings, the extended editions, because those are
Okay,
the
that's
only
good
ones.
because I don't
Those are the only
think,
ones that
yeah,
exist.
I couldn't tell you honestly what the timelines of the regular editions are. I haven't seen them since they were
That's
in the
the only time I
theater.
saw the regular editions also. For me, the extended editions are the correct versions of it. So, all right.
That's why you're my
That's right.
people.
All right. Fellowship. What is happening in I know Fellowship is your favorite. I would have kept it for the end, but we're going in. We should go in order. It would, what is going on in the Fellowship of the Rings at the 45-minute mark on the extended edition?
Okay, the intro alone is about 15, 20 minutes. I think it runs like 17 or 18 minutes. So we've got that. Then we go to the Shire for Bilbo's birthday and Gandalf. I'm trying to decide if they I think this is around the time that they may have just left the Shire. A lot happens in that interim. There's just a lot of talking. Yeah, I'm going to say this is somewhere around maybe where the Ringwraiths first come into contact with them. They've gotten Merry and Pippin and they've fallen off the path and they're hiding underneath the tree branch. I might be a little too far ahead or a little
You're
too
far
far behind, but
ahead.
I
You're
don't think
far
they've come
ahead.
to
They're not
Bree
there yet.
yet.
They're not there yet.
They're
Nope.
not there yet. Then I would then they then my next guess would be that they are just getting ready to leave and Sam is dropping Eves on
Nope.
Gandalf.
It's after that. It's the exact point at the 45-minute mark is when Sam says, "If I go any further, this will be the farthest I've ever been away from the Shire." And
Oh,
then
okay. That's a good moment.
he
Sherlock
starts
moments.
cooking their dinner, breakfast, second lunch, I don't know, one of the things. 11s,
Elevensies.
he's cooking something, for them. Okay, that's Fellowship. Now we will go to the Two Towers. What is happening at the 45-minute mark
Yes.
on in the Two Towers on the extended edition?
Okay. So that one starts off with Frodo and Sam, and they're crossing the rocks, and they're running into Gollum for the first time. That's in the beginning. And then the next thing I think we do is we follow Gimli, Aragorn, and Legolas while they're hunting orcs. And then somewhere in that timeline is Merry and Pippin trying not to get eaten. They don't need their legs. I think it's probably somewhere in that bubble. I want to say it's where Aragorn kicks the helmet and breaks his toe in real life, but that might be a
No,
little
it's not
past it
there.
or a little before. Not there. Okay, so before that, maybe. Is it before or
It
after?
is before that.
Okay, then it's when they meet the Rohirrim and they circle them and send them on their way and say, this land
No,
is forsaken.
it is. So sorry, you got that. You got that one wrong. So in the Two Towers, it's where Frodo and Sam are arguing about whether they should be giving food to Gollum. And then Gollum starts moving towards Frodo, and starts talking about the power of precious.
The precious. I swear. On the
That's right.
precious. I
There,
always swear on the
it's a
precious.
good thing to swear on. And for your final foray in this segment, The Return of the King. What is going on in the 4.5 hour extended version of The Return of the King at the 45-minute mark?
I'm probably going to go way too far into this one. I think it's going to be around the timeline where Merry and Pippin are separated, where he grabs the Palantir and that all goes down. somewhere-ish in there. Because at the beginning, we have the death of Saruman, which we actually get to see. We have, again, we have Frodo and Sam. Yeah, this is, I'm probably way off on this one.
All right, well, I mean, you were right about the fact that it's right after Pippin and Merry are separated, because the 45-minute mark is where Gandalf and Pippin actually go to meet Denethor for the first time.
Okay, so it's Shadowfax, show me the meaning of haste. Ish. If we don't have a Nazgul on our butts. All right, so I was a little closer.
All right, but you did really well with those, Heather. Part of the idea of this thing is the journey. You know, so it's fun. It's giving you a chance to, and me and everyone listening, a chance to reminisce about these great movies. You know, so why not? You know, so you did very well considering you had absolutely, no advanced warning.
No, you asked me what my favorite movies were, and I did think about it, and I realized, he's probably going to bring this up at some point. And then I went, we'll see, whatever. It's not like I could research.
Well, what did you think
for that?
What did you think why did you think I wanted them?
After it was out of my mind, it was out of sight. So I didn't come back to it. I think when we brought up Terminator 2 in the last episode, it came back to me, and I thought, oh yeah, weren't we just talking about my favorite? Why were we talking about my favorite movies? But then we were so busy talking about Die Hard.
Okay, no, that's fair.
Well done, you master of distraction.
I'm glad that I was able to do that. All right. Excellent. All right. So Heather, for the final time this week and this season, would you like to tell people where they can find Heather Baxendale?
Yes. If you like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I'm doing a podcast right now with Mark Armstead. We are hosting it on rabbitholepodcast.com. You can find it on any of your streaming services. It is called Word of Hellmouth. We put out 2 episodes a month, and it's just a rewatch show. We're on the second season right now, and it is so much fun going back through our Buffy experiences and seeing it with fresh eyes. Neither of us have watched the series in at least 10 years. So seeing it with adult eyes as opposed to experiencing it as adolescents. It's really, it's eye-opening in a lot of ways and really great too.
Cool.
Wonderful.
And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter, or you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. So Heather, this has been a blast for me. I've had so much fun this week. I hope you did too. And more importantly, I hope all of our listeners also enjoy themselves. You know, listening to the two of us, babble on about all these different things that are both diehard and non-diehard over this week. So thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me on. It's always a great time.
Yes, it was a lot of fun. I will be back on Monday with a new guest. I already hinted who it is. But we'll see if anyone remembers what I said, 20 minutes ago before we started talking about all these other great movies. So who knows? But I'll be back on Monday. But until then, have a great weekend, everybody. And yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little villages,